Smart. Strong down the right side. Crazy scoop shot blocked. Went right to Aaron Baines, who lays it in with left hand. The Celtics have been better in every facet. They're also getting the bounces, and they have a 20-point lead to start game one.
Well, and you said carving Cleveland apart. Whoopsie, drop it. 98.5 The Sports Hub. Rage Against the Machine gets more and more annoying every day that passes by.
That's not Rage Against the Machine.
Whatever it is, it's annoying.
That is, I think, a Rage Against the Machine knockoff. Who is that?
Rage Against...
No, that's not Prophets of Rage. That's just somebody, I think, trying to sound like Rage Against the Machine, I believe.
Okay.
I could be wrong, unless that's some random clip. I just thought the quality's a little higher.
All right. So, obviously, you know, now the Celtics have won big in Game 1. And LeBron James takes time off. He likes to rest. And he had a very pedestrian game yesterday. But Chris Broussard, who, when he's not, you know, not believing in dinosaurs and things of that nature, he comes out and talks
he's
about
He's got a little
basketball.
Carl Everett in him, are you saying?
Yeah, he's got...
The devil put the dinosaurs here!
He doesn't like the gays so much, that Chris Broussard.
No, that we have heard, yes.
Yeah, see, he's not a big fan of the gays.
He's
very squeamish around gay people. He's an expert. He knows everything.
Right.
Chris Broussard knows what you should be doing in your personal life. You say, hey, listen, I'm a very short basketball reporter. Here, let me give you a guideline to life. Oh, you like people of the same sex. Nah. That's for the birds. Is what he says.
Do you remember that? I don't even know how that came up. Like, how did we ever find that out about Chris Broussard?
Probably something on Twitter. On Twitter up.
No, because I remember him actually being on TV saying that, which is weird.
I like that. I like
Why do I know that about Chris Broussard?
Because there was a little bit of fallout. I just, as if it was like, you know, nuclear war or something. It's like, I see you over there. You seem to be attracted to the same sex.
No.
I'm a reporter.
Yes.
All right. So was this after the game?
This is before the game. All of these different networks are trying to find new ways to get you to tune into their shows and try to get like social media involved. They love social media. So they did this new show that's got Chris Broussard and this guy named Jason McIntyre, who I'd never really heard speak until I saw this clip. So they're on one of these shows where it's like, let's yell at each other at the show. Listen to this clip and think to yourself, who in programming thought this was a good idea? So this is Jason McIntyre and Chris Broussard. And first of all, Chris Broussard starts off with a somewhat, it's not really a hot take, but he comes out like he's firing on all cylinders, okay?
No, if you told me, once you said Jason McIntyre, the Jason McIntyre?
I don't know who he is, but you'll know who he is after this.
Jason McIntyre?
He's a guy you don't want to have on your show.
He's Joey McIntyre's little brother.
Yes, he's the less attractive of the two. But then again, who isn't less attractive than Joey Mack? Let's take a listen.
I give the Rockets a better chance than I give the Celtics against the Cavs. Like, the Celtics they have no chance of beating the Cavaliers.
You're going on record. No chance.
Didn't I just say it? The Celtics have...
You're going on record?
Did I
just say it?
Let that sink in.
It's on record.
Boom!
And you don't even know the ramifications if I'm wrong. Let's just say Skid Row. Just say Daddy's got the mortgage on the line. You're on the record.
Didn't I just say it?
Didn't I just say it? You know what happens if I'm wrong?
Mm-hmm.
Nothing. Absolutely
literally no consequence whatsoever.
Nope. Three people knew you said it in the first place.
Even if the world knew I said it. Imagine getting your prognostications wrong.
You know who heard that take? Rich certainly been us too.
That's it. Well, you had the Christian McGillicuddy over there. I don't know where the other guy is.
The Cavaliers.
You're going on record. No chance.
Didn't I just say it? The Celtics have no chance of beating...
Okay.
Wow. Wow.
Give me a cool drink to cool down.
You're saying...
In a towel.
You're saying they don't have a chance. What? Again, you're putting so much on the line here, Mr. Broussard. How am I going to be able to listen to you again?
It reminds me of, what was the thing the Onion had? The steam bath?
Oh, yeah.
It was called, like, get in the steam bath. It's too hot.
Yeah, it had one of the guys from...
Down the street. Yeah. Levin Reed.
Levin Reed, that's right.
The Celtics have no chance of beating the Cavaliers.
Can I interject a question real quick?
No chance whatsoever, and Houston has a chance.
Who's got the better coach, Brad Stevens or Ty Lue?
Oh, boy, someone's on speed.
Mm. Who's got a better chance? I'm very excited to be on television.
Houston has a chance.
Who's got the better coach, Brad Stevens or Ty Lue?
Well, it's nice that they let one of the Oompa Loompas in.
It almost seems sped up. Like, I need to, like, slow him down to make him a little more manly.
He's like an Oompa Loompa that's just in an eight ball. He's grinding his teeth, very excited to be there.
That's not a gobstopper.
He just sat
and Oompa Loompa on an eight ball.
Yeah. Okay. And who just sat on his nuts. Didn't I just say that?
Sure.
Next question. Who was a better on 3-point shooting, Boston or Cleveland? In the playoffs, in the regular season.
Well, in the regular season.
Go by the percentages. Just go by it.
Well, percentage may be Boston, but Cleveland made more.
Who is the better?
Cleveland made more.
Made more, but the percentage to Boston. Better defensive team. Statistics say Boston or Cleveland.
Boston, but
Boston's a better defensive team.
I could
Boston
say that.
Boston is a better three-point shooting team.
I not say that about several teams in the NBA.
You could,
the
but they're not playing here.
The LeBron James.
That's the one advantage they have.
Who's the best player on Boston? No, who is it?
It's LeBron. We know it's
who's
LeBron.
The best player on Boston?
I would say Jason Tatum.
Every little thing you said gets nullified
because of LeBron.
By the best player on Cleveland is LeBron James.
Okay.
Period.
Fine.
The end.
So in you,
I
Indiana.
I can say the same. Hold on. No.
No, we're not done. We're not done.
Since you brought it up.
We're not done here. I have so much more to say about 3-point percentage.
It's like being yelled at by Stitch.
Ohana means family. It's like the argument. Who had the better 3-point percentage? Oh, God. Wait a second. Now, no, all right. Now I'm reconsidering everything. The earth is flat now. Okay, thank you. 3-point percentage. You had the better 3-point percentage. Well, in fairness, okay, yeah, now you've convinced me. That's the stat we're running with here.
Toronto, Cleveland.
Forget Toronto.
No.
It's out.
Since it's done.
Think about Indiana.
Think about Indiana.
That's what I do every day.
Think about Indiana.
Toronto.
No, it's out.
Think about Indiana.
Since you brought Cleveland to seven. Who had two all-stars?
That's different because the Toronto Raptors are the better coach?
Toronto or Cleveland?
Well, I don't know. Ty Lue and Dwayne Casey's a toss-up.
Dwayne Casey was third in
But here's why that doesn't apply. Indiana.
Because of LeBron James. Period.
Toronto's stupid. They're not a smart team.
Loud noises. Loud noises.
Volume. You could tell they're very upset at each other.
Oompa Loompa sounds pissed.
That was 3 minutes of just two people yelling at full volume about 3-point percentage.
Yeah, there's not a lot was said about that.
Not a lot at all. But it doesn't mean that Chris Broussard doesn't have something up his sleeve to get you talking this morning.
Okay.
There's a little narrative that he's got going on. Maybe things aren't as chipper within the Celtics organization as we think they might be.
I've been thinking about the success of the Celtics without Kyrie Irving and Gordon Hayward. And I've thought to myself, if I'm Kyrie Irving and I'm sitting there watching this go on, obviously you're going to say you're happy for your teammates. And I'm sure on a certain level you are happy that the team is winning. But I'm just wondering, how are you feeling? You want to be needed. You want to feel, if you're a star especially, you want to be a part of why you're winning. And for this young team to be winning the way they are without Kyrie, I'm just wondering how you feel. I'm asking the callers. Hit us up at 877.
What is this on?
Bumble F Radio. I have no idea.
What is this on?
All I know is I got sent it, and I'm like, all right.
Why?
We should call it.
So
you're right, Chris. Yeah. How come I didn't think of this?
So you know what? Kyrie is going to demand a trade.
My God, you are smarter than the rest of us, Chris Broussard. I can't believe about this new thought process. I can't believe I didn't think of this. You're a genius.
Well, Kyrie Irving knows that his financial future is up in the air now. You want to be the man.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because all of a sudden there's going to be like, Kyrie, take a seat. Terry Rozier's got it. Kyrie, take a seat.
We have a new star. Come on.
We got a superstar here. Come on.
996-6369. And let us know how you're feeling, how you would be feeling.
I wonder how hard Broussard fought for not having 69 in the number.
996-6369. And let us know how you're feeling, how you would be feeling if you're Kyrie Irving. I know I played sports, not at the pro level, obviously. And just keeping it real,
I
wanted to get mine.
Sure.
Yeah. On that 8th grade basketball team, there was a lot of pressure.
Chris Broussard.
There you have. Chris Broussard.
I feel smarter for having listened.
Well, listen. Not so much with these dinosaurs that never existed.
Forget Toronto.
No.
It's out. It's done. Think about Indiana.
Think about Indiana.
Who had the better coach? Toronto or Cleveland?
Well, I don't know.
We all have our morning routine.
The kids ain't going to learn nothing.
Thanks for making Toucher and Rich part of yours.
That's right, baby.
On 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Okie dokie. Let's go.
Here with the ball fake on Jeff Green, drives right by him, switches to the left hand, and lays it in softly off the window. And the Boston Celtics have dominated game one in every way there is.
They have ran the Cavaliers out of the building.
And then a parrot came and attacked Cedric Maxwell.
To celebrate how Dunkin' Donuts cold brew keeps Celtics fans running, be listening this morning at 7:50 for your chance to score a pair of tickets to game two of the Eastern Conference Championship tomorrow night at the Garden. That's coming up at 7:50. Christopher Mannix. You know him from the worlds of television and everything else.
And Yahoo Sports.
Yes, indeed. Chris Mannix, thank you for joining us, sir.
Good morning, guys.
Good morning to you.
So let me ask you real quick, because we were making fun of an article that came out last week by Brian Windhorst, where he talked about how LeBron James walks better than anybody else on the court, conserves energy better than anybody else. And at the time, we were kind of mocking it. But then I realized, I think for the first time, that just how many plays LeBron James doesn't come back on defense now. Like, I saw several instances last night where he just, on a fast break, refused to go to the other end of the court. Is this a situation where game two is going to be a game he's going to decide to try, and game one was a game where he just decided not to try as hard?
This is season long with LeBron. I mean, I followed the Cavs, for about three or four games in March, and I remember just distinctly watching LeBron have some of the worst defensive sequences I've ever seen, and entirely due to lack of effort. And look, he gets a pass on it because of the burden he has to carry for this team offensively, but it is a bad look, and it's a tough look for a coach to have to kind of deal with, because, I know the player, one of the players you're talking about from last night, where the Celtics were on kind of a modified fast break, and LeBron was just kind of going for a stroll there, coming back from beyond half court. But it's something that the Cavs have to live with. And LeBron, is going to dial it up to a 10 in game two. I mean, I was at the first two games of the Indiana series, and I saw LeBron play a very similar game to what he played in game one, and then he came out in game two and put 46 on the Pacers. So I think you're going to see 40-plus minutes and the best possible effort from LeBron James on Tuesday.
Okay, is that going to be enough? Because compare what Indiana was able to do in Game 2 or not able to do with what you think the potential defensively that a Brad Stevens system and guys like Marcus Morris can do to slow him down.
Well, I think that they'll have to do a lot more. And don't forget, LeBron went for 46 in game two of that series, and they almost lost. I mean, they blew a coverage on Victor Oladipo at the back end of that game. And if Oladipo had made it three with, you know, nobody near him, you know, the closest guy was in Akron, basically, they would have tied that game. Who knows what would have happened in overtime. So, you know, just LeBron just going off for this team, you know, guarantees absolutely nothing. And Boston's a better team than Indiana. I mean, Indiana, I just remember watching that series thinking, you know, some of their strategic decisions were some of the worst I'd seen, whether it was substitution patterns, their kind of one-dimensional offense. I was really surprised Indiana was as good as they were in that series. In Boston, they're just much more disciplined. They execute better. And if you're the Celtics, you go into this game, too, thinking, look, we just blew out Cleveland, and Jason Tatum didn't play great. Terry Rozier didn't play great. We had a handful of guys that didn't have their A effort, and those types of guys have played A games in the playoffs.
A lot has been written and said about Al Horford. He's been a polarizing figure all season long. I don't need to tell you that. You're very familiar with it. But not only has he been the MVP of the playoffs for the Celtics, but once again, his work on defense yesterday was huge early on.
Well, he just has a great understanding for the concepts there. And I know that's kind of a sort of ambiguous phrase, but, you know, you see the shot blocking every so often and the rotations, but he's just in the right place at the right time every single time. And his ability to switch on virtually everybody. Aaron Baines, too, by the way. Baines is another huge part of this defense. But Horford, you know, just kind of jumping from player to player, spot to spot, you know, seamlessly moving these guys around. It's, you know, Kevin Garnett was the best I'd ever seen at that, and he did it back in his Defensive Player of the Year season in 07-08. Horford has a lot of those same characteristics. He plays a lot of the same style defensively without putting up the big numbers, but, you know, just kind of being there at every place on the floor.
You know, one thing about Brad Stevens, and obviously he's going to get a ton of credit, you know, for when as this series goes on, especially if they continue to win, one thing he does that scares me, but it always seems to work, is whenever he gets players in foul trouble, like yesterday Marcus Morris within the first couple minutes had two quick fouls, you almost never see him yank a star player if they get in quick foul trouble and he lets them play. Has he ever talked to you or explained like what his reasoning behind that is? I mean, it's luckily in the playoffs at least, it seems to have worked out well. I'm just not used to seeing that.
Yeah, it's funny. I asked him about that after the game last night, and his thinking on this goes back to his days, he told me, as a player, where he said he remembered being yanked out of games in foul trouble and really losing his rhythm for the rest of the game. So his philosophy, he told me, was that 99% of the time, if a guy gets two early fouls, he's going to leave him in there. I'm sure there are some exceptions, but, you know, for a guy like Marcus Morris, he's going to let him play through it, trust him, and as he told me, he said if he fouls out in the first quarter, somebody else is going to go out there and play. So it's interesting. I don't know if I'd call it unique necessarily, but there's probably only a handful of coaches in that situation that would have left Marcus Morris in the game. Stevens was one of them, and without question, that was a huge move that paid off big for Boston.
Man, it makes me nervous every time, and there's been several cases in the postseason where he's done that. But
guys have been playing the first half with three fouls.
Oh, yeah, but almost each time it seems to have paid off, and I just, once again, I'm not used to that, seeing coaches do that, and it's going to be one of the things that if they end up like winning this series or continue to go on, that I think a lot of people are going to start ripping off in this league.
I agree, and especially with veterans. Look, if you have, you know, a Tatum or even a Jaylen Brown, and look, those two guys play through two fouls, three fouls all the time as well, but if you have a younger player, I can almost understand the reflexive instinct to pull them off the floor because they might get swept up in the emotion, or if they're defending a physical player like LeBron, you could see them picking up a quick third or fourth foul. But for a veteran player, he just seems to trust these guys. And I thought it was a pretty bold move with Morris having to defend LeBron. And, you know, we talk all, you know, in the days before that series started about the bodies Boston could throw at LeBron, whether it's Shemmy or Tatum or Brown or anybody else. He trusted Morris, and I think that was one of the biggest moves of that game one because of how well Morris played.
All right, so let's say that LeBron James, I mean, I don't want to take anything away from the Celtics and their defense on LeBron James. It was excellent, but we also can all agree that the effort just wasn't there. And the whole Cavaliers team, I mean, you saw two teams on two completely different speeds. So let's say LeBron James does give a maximum effort in game two. Is he still in trouble the way that they were able to shut down Kevin Love for game one?
He's in trouble if Kevin Love doesn't play well, if Korver doesn't play well, if his supporting cast doesn't play well. It's as simple as that. I mean, you know, before the game, I thought it was interesting that Brad noted that, you know, in the last series, the non-LeBron players averaged 84 points per game. That to me told me that, you know, he was once again going to key on the supporting cast, just as he did against Milwaukee, going one-on-one with Giannis, just as he did with Philadelphia, with Embiid and Simmons having, you know, their opportunity to score one-on-one. You know, LeBron's a little bit different. The Celtics aren't going to let LeBron have a layup line out there, but they're going to give Morris and Shemmy and Tatum opportunities to defend him, you know, one-on-one on the perimeter. So it's going to be on everybody else. It's going to be on Love and Korver and those guys to start making some shots. And really, you know, look, Boston's defense was good in Game 1, but the Cavs missed a lot of open shots. And if they start making those shots in Game 2, we could have an entirely different game.
All right, Chris Mannix, Chris Broussard, we just heard from, and he has the idea that Kyrie Irving is silently stewing on the bench, seeing the success this team has had, and it is, in his opinion, infuriating him. Your thoughts?
Well, I'd be pissed off, too, if I can't play.
No.
No,
it's not that he can't play.
He's upset that he wants out.
Yeah, I know. As part of, like, you know, trying to, you know, write something broader, you know, over the next couple of days, you know, I watch Kyrie on the bench because, you know, Kyrie, he's the thread that connects these two teams. And he looked like he was having a pretty good time on the bench there. I mean, he was, you know, chatting up, I think, with Tristan Thompson once when I saw him. He was goofing around with Gordon Hayward on the bench. He didn't look like a guy that was in a particularly bad mood. I mean, if you're telling me that Kyrie's pissed off that he can't play, I 100% buy that. I mean, are you kidding me? But is he, you know, somehow secretly upset that Terry Rozier is getting his? Kyrie's pretty secure in who he is. And Kyrie knows that as long as that knee is healthy, he's getting a max contract in 2019. I don't really buy that.
All right, finally, Chris, I want to ask you about this report that came out this weekend that the 76ers are looking to not only do anything they can to get LeBron James, but apparently they want Kawhi Leonard as well. What do you see the chances of that happening? What would they have to give up? And is this something that you believe could be a reality?
I mean, look, I want to be on that Elon Musk flight to Mars, but I don't know if I'm going to get that either. I mean, look, it's you know, not to be glib, but, you know, that strikes me as one of those Brian Colangelo specialties where it's, you know, we're going to be aggressive. We're going to go out and try to get Kawhi. Well, look, there's 20 teams in the league that are going to try to get Kawhi Leonard. We're going to go out and recruit LeBron. Everybody knows they're going to recruit LeBron. I mean, I think LeBron is more realistic for obvious reasons. I mean, they have the cap flexibility now because Simmons isn't getting a contract yet. They have a hole at small forward. Simmons is represented by Rich Paul, who also represents LeBron. You can see the connective tissue there. But if they want to keep their core together, they're not getting Kawhi Leonard. I mean, I can't see San Antonio being at all interested in a Markelle Fultz headline package for Kawhi, not when there are other teams, Boston included, that could make a stronger run at Kawhi Leonard.
Man, you can't, if you're Boston, you after everything you've seen in the playoffs, you can't make a trade for Kawhi Leonard, can you? Because you'd have to give up either Brown or Tatum, right?
Yeah, I mean, look, what you want to do if you're the Celtics is, you know, take a step back after these playoffs are over and let it breathe for a minute. Because right now, look, I agree with you. You're watching Brown, and Brown, who came into this league as with a reputation as one of the smarter players in his draft class, a hard worker, is already looking like a potential star. I think Tatum is going to be one of the next great offensive players in this league. But you have to kind of take a step back for a second, and you have to remember what Kawhi Leonard is. He's a mid-20s superstar, the best two-way player in the NBA this side of LeBron James, and Kawhi plays harder on every possession. So I would instinctively say, no, you got to keep these two young guys, but you have to see what's on the table. You have to see what it might cost. You absolutely have to kick the tires on Kawhi Leonard.
All right, Chris Mannix, as always, thank you for the time, sir.
Anytime, fellas.
All right, we appreciate it. Here are your headlines.
Don't take it with 12 on the shot clock. He knows it, so he pounds Love into the paint. Horford spins, falls away. Very tough shot, swish. I mean, everything is going for Al Horford here right
now. That's the position I said you had to win right there. If you dominate that position, you win this basketball game.
Al Horford, plus 27. Kevin Love, minus 27.
Hey, 98.5 The Sports Hub to celebrate how Dunkin' Donuts cold brew keeps Celtics fans running. Be listening at 7:50 for your chance of a pair of tickets to see Game 2.
10 minutes from now.
On Tuesday night. So you are afraid of artificial intelligence, are you not, Rich?
The level that I have seen displayed as of late of the way that it's invading our privacy and it's becoming more like the movie The Terminator, I would say yes, I am a little bit disturbed by it.
Okay, so you've seen this Boston Dynamics big dog robot.
Oh, yeah. Are you? Well, there's two that have been out there in the last couple of weeks.
The big dog one is the one that can run and then jump over stuff.
Okay. That's the one that we saw running outside?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. It's the T-100 or T-1000, whatever it's called.
Okay, so what do you think the main point of people creating the internet was? At a certain
information.
Point.
It's for information. So okay. You could have it at the access, right at your fingertips.
What do you think, at least in its infancy, and even now, what the majority of the internet is used for?
You're saying for X-rated purposes.
It's for pornography.
Sure.
How much do you think, and I'm being dead serious, I'm not being silly, how much do you think building lifelike robots is in some way a fantasy of people to live in a world where you can date a woman of to your specifications, that you can program to act in a certain fashion, and so you don't have to have a human relationship?
Well, I mean, that's weird science. It's also Westworld, which I've been watching for the last couple seasons, so that's essentially the basis of it.
Yeah, and if you watch Silicon Valley, like, these guys fall in love with these robots. So I'm wondering, like, legit, and then they'll go, no, it's, like, for war and stuff like that, and then you're like, yeah, okay, that makes sense. But, like, why are you making them, like, human? You know what I'm saying? Like,
sure.
Like, you could make a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Like, you could make, conceivably, aren't there things that are, like, the size of a fly that they can, like, run around and take cameras from? Like, why is it got to be so human-looking? Like, why is it got to run on two legs?
Yeah. Okay, so there was an episode of Black Mirror that I thought was brilliant, and it was about this couple who they had just gotten married, and the man dies in a car accident. So she's grieving, and her friend goes, I signed you up for this service that I want you to be a part of. It helped the grieving process of somebody I knew died, and it got me through it. And she starts getting these emails from somebody that has the same name as her husband. And when she opens up the emails, they're written almost exactly the way he would write them. And it's kind of freaking her out. And so she keeps writing back saying, how are you speaking like him? And he goes, well, it's because we overtook all of his social media and emails and learned everything we could about him and have created essentially a clone of your husband. And so she goes, I wish I could talk to you. She gets real desperate one night and she goes, send me all of the videos you have of him and give us about 20 minutes. So she sends all the videos, and sure enough, from his voice, they were able to call him up and it sounds just like her husband's talking to him. And then they say, if you want to go to the next level, if you spend a decent amount of money, we can make you actually feel like he's there. And the next day she's got at her door a box. And it's essentially a human robot that looks just like him, talks like him, and sounds just like him.
Okay, so you agree.
And don't think that we aren't getting close to something very similar to that.
Yeah, because look at how people have kind of removed themselves from day-to-day interaction. You know, we've read stories like people are friends with people that they never see in person. That it's all involving text and social media.
Sure, sure.
That they never see it. You hear stories of people, you know, in the high school, college, that have literally never been over to their friend's house. So I see this video, and I get it, you know, you have robots and they're neat and everything. Like, why does it have to run on 2 feet? like of all the things, like, why does it have to run on 2 feet?
Well,
it's all a way that eventually
it turns into having, like, bots that you can hook up with.
Yeah, yes. Fake robots.
Yes.
Or not fake robots. Fake human beings, mm-hmm, that have, like, that Black Mirror stuff happening.
Yep.
And you can make them any way you want. And it's so you have sex with robots.
Well, it's and you don't have to do the tough part of the relationship, which is actually have to deal with emotions and deal with different personalities clashing, arguments.
You can make them to your exact physical specifications.
Oh, sure. Sure, which is weird because you wonder if it might get to the point. This is now I'm really getting a big picture. If it's going to get to the point
where we start procreating,
yes,
oh,
where it's this way so much easier. I get the physical need out of it. I can even get the emotional.
Oh, you get the
need
entire
out of it as
emotional
well.
Need,
but you know, I don't have to worry about getting anybody pregnant. So in the end,
it's so beyond that. these guys aren't getting anyone pregnant. It's not even that pregnancy's down the line. They'll get them pregnant. They'll just make another one.
No, what I mean is there will be no babies that will come out of it.
Oh,
because how many people do you think have gotten pregnant just by, this is somebody who's actually listening to what I'm saying, and then one night you hook up and boom, you have a kid.
As if, now with like Tinder and everything, it's such a chore to meet people.
But people do get pregnant.
What I'm saying is why do you have to, like, technology has made it so easy. None of you people know what it was like to go out and buckhead for weekend after weekend and get turned down. Nick, go ahead.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Hey.
So going on the Black Mirror thing, have you guys seen the movie Transcendence at all?
No.
So you got to watch it. It's about being able to upload your memory to a computer and you start living forever. It's actually something they're trying to do at MIT. My father's a nerd for life, and he keeps talking about how this is going to be the end of it, and you're going to be able to have your consciousness live forever.
That's what's going on in Westworld right now. They're creating robots that have the actual conscience of people, and they're trying to create it so you could live forever.
No one wants to be around you that long. I'll tell you this. No one wants to be around you that long, and you need to die. You need the rest.
You need to go away.
Yeah.
For people to miss you.
Yeah.
For no other reason people to miss you.
It's people that I love dearly. After a while, you're like, all right, get away.
Wouldn't be the worst thing if you weren't here anymore.
Yeah, robot you sucks. I just saw this thing, and I'm being dead serious. I saw this thing on two legs. I go, that's nothing practical about that. The only thing that you're doing with that is just an excuse. You might as well just put a fifi on that thing right away.
Right, you're all set.
And by the way, they're going to make like no guy ones. They're going to be just entirely women.
The guy ones are just going to like clean up.
Yeah, like the guy ones. Yeah. The guy ones are just going to be like your gay friend.
Yeah.
I got the guy from the millionaire house thing hanging out all the time.
I just see this stuff, and I think we are one step away.
Well,
we're not going to procreate anymore.
I completely agree with you. I completely agree with you.
Because why? Relationships are a pain in the ass. Ask anybody who's been in one. You're sitting there. Imagine having it without any of the fights, without having any of the emotional connection. You're sick of how this one looks. Let's move on to a different one.
And think if you grew up with it. So it's not weird.
Either that or only the poorest of the poor will procreate. Ones you can't afford.
Oh, so you have an idiocracy.
You could. You could. You couldn't afford to have one of these robots. Then maybe that would be the situation you would be in.
Because right now, it's the people of our age, or probably people that are around right now, I would hope my children as well, would not fall in love with a robot. But think if that was the norm, and then you were born while that was going on and it was existed, and that was entirely the way that you grew up.
I saw that movie Her, the one with Joaquin Phoenix, where he falls in love with essentially the Siri voice, and in concept it sounds completely ridiculous, but by the time you're done watching it, you're like, man, this seems believable. Like, if you're a lonely guy and you don't have anyone to talk to you, and there's this thing on the other end that's constantly telling you how great you are, making you feel good, why would you go out and try it with a real person?
I mean, you get a real doll and you put a Siri in her.
Yeah,
human race dies off and the robots take over.
Yeah.
That's it.
I'm telling you, it's 90% of the reason they're building them. There's no other reason. There's no other reason that you need to build a robot that runs on two legs. There's none. There is none. Have it fly. Like, seriously, think about it.
There's drones,
Have it fly.
That's the first step.
And then it slows down and, like, jumps over stuff. Well, I don't need that. Have it fly around. Have it be able to stretch its arms out and, like, get on top of stuff. This thing just runs around like a dumb spaz.
And it's faster than you, and it's stronger than you, and it can take you down in a heartbeat.
But it doesn't need to be on two legs.
The dog one's the scariest. The one that figured out how to open up a door.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then they tried to take it away from the dog, and the dog got pissed and hung on.
That's fine.
Eerie stuff.
Well, I got to tell you this. If I'm creating a superhero, I don't want it on two legs.
Somebody just said Louis Anderson will create a harem of young comics.
Hey, Robert, why don't you stay over at my house? I saw you do an open mic at the Punchline. Want to come over?
To celebrate how Dunkin' Donuts cold brew keeps Celtics fans running, caller number 10 right now, the Pride Motor Group contest line, 617-931-0985. Will score a pair of tickets to Game 2 of the Eastern Conference Championship tomorrow night at the TD Garden.
The games are only half of it. Thatcher and Rich, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
98.5 The Sports Hub. We're Thatcher and Rich. At 8 o'clock, we have a meeting of the two of the most outstanding Americans that exist. They were on a show together. Okay, so what was this place you were at this weekend?
Okay, so my wife for Mother's Day wanted to go to this thing I'd never heard of called the Brimfield Fair, the Brimfield Antique Expo Fair. It's this giant flea market that happens twice a year, about an hour west of the city of Boston, and it's just in this giant field, and there are thousands of vendors that show up at this. And you go to like one tent, and it'll be set up really nice, like it's a store, and one is just literally piles of crap all over the place, and you can pick through it. I mean, I don't know how many more dirty dolls I needed to see. It was like crappy toys being thrown in a corner, pieces of like half broken pieces of wood off a boat that someone's buying and going, wow, I could put this in our bedroom. If you are a hipster bar in Brooklyn, you went to this place and got all of your decor for your new bar that you're setting up. Squirrels and glass cases and such. But the kind of people who worked at some of these booths are somewhat terrifying. There was one guy that I tried to take a picture of something random, and he stood up and blocked me from the photo, so I was only able to get it from a weird angle. Fred, would you like to take a look at what that is a picture of?
That is a picture of a...
I just realized you might not even recognize what character that is.
I don't.
Okay.
Is it not Scott Weiland?
No, that is Brett Spiner, a.k.a. Data from Star Trek. It's an oil painting of him.
Okay.
And what is he dressed as?
A priest.
And what is he holding?
Communion.
Yeah, he's giving Holy Communion. Yes. And that is okay. An oil painting. And
you were blocked from taking a picture of that. Why?
Gentlemen did not like me taking pictures of his merchandise.
Right, because then you just make a print of it.
Apparently
you're
you
a millionaire.
Do. On top of that, I took this picture right here. It's a giant Bruce Lee statue somebody was selling. But fascinating in the background, the amount of lawn jockeys that they're selling out there. Like, straight up, we don't care if it's racist as hell. We got lawn jockeys everywhere.
Now, how far away is this?
I mean, like, just right in front of everyone, you're like, oh, my God.
Now, how far away is this place?
About an hour.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, it's about an hour away.
So you drove an hour? How long did you spend there?
Sunday and not Saturday.
We went Sunday.
Good.
It's an hour, right?
Dan says 2 hours.
No. It's not 2 hours away. It took an hour. It's not a long way at all. It was about an hour drive to get there.
Saturday.
It's the way I drive. Vroom, vroom.
That's right. You're going pretty quick. Now, how long did you stay there?
About 3 hours.
Oh, what did your kids do?
They thought it was kind of funny. Like, there was some really weird stuff there. Like, there'd be guys who have just, like, piles of dirty Legos that you could dig through. I mean, everyone's, like, you know, hands are all messed up and jacked. But then you see certain things there that you're wondering, how the hell did this end up at the Brimfield Fair? Like, you know what that is, Fred?
Is that like, oh, that's, yeah, gynecological, a chair that a gynecologist would use.
Yeah, stirrups. Someone was selling gynecological chairs.
Yeah.
Right there.
Which is easy for you to say.
Which I'm sure is something that if you're going to the finest gynecologist, they picked it up from the dirty Brimfield Fair in order to go there.
Well, that's a nice conversation.
Just put that in the corner.
Yeah.
I saw that in Flipper Flop.
Yeah, if you're a young woman and you go into some guy's house, it's like, what that? Oh, that's, don't worry about that. I'll never put you in there. All right.
Eyes left.